Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're going down the ETF route, nothing wrong with dollar cost averaging and nothing wrong with staggering your investments. So if you want to get started on that, just invest an amount today. Don't wait. You can manage your risk, but you can't know what the market's going to do in the future. There's a misunderstanding of timing the markets.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners. I'm Phil Muscatello. Today my guest is, well, I found my guest on Twitter. We seem to follow the same people on FinTwit, that's financial Twitter, and we laugh at the same bad jokes. Hi, Adam.
Hello, mate. How you doing, Phil?
Yeah, good. Really good. Thanks very much for coming around.
No, delighted to be here.
Adam Turk is an investment manager at Harbourside Capital. Many people say that Twitter is toxic, but I found the FinTwit community to be good fun with lots of great lessons for investors, as long as you can understand sarcasm and watch out for the people that are pumping individual stocks. It's the case, isn't it?
No, I agree with you, actually. I've been on Twitter. I'm not a big user of Twitter, but I'm a fairly regular user. I flick on it most days. There's a few people that I do sort of follow with more interest. I think you have to be careful who you follow, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think it is a really good resource. There are some really good people on there that share a lot of knowledge.
Great knowledge, isn't it? Yeah.
Just get used to, I mean, it's the world of noise. Block out noise. Mm-hmm. Use it for your own purposes. Some people will be happy to engage with you with sensible questions.
Yeah.
You'll normally get shot down with stupid questions. Mm-hmm. And you'll normally get shot down if it's a question that you could answer yourself with a little bit of
research and just Google the answer.
Effort,
yeah. Right. That's right.
So I identified that, but I think that, as they call it, FinTwit. I did wonder if that was a separate bit of Twitter for a while, but
it's just a naturally evolved area.
Exactly. But I think there's some really useful and really interesting things to people to follow.
Yeah, well, actually, what we'll do is in the show notes, we'll put down our list of the people that we follow as well so that people can follow some of these people as well.
Good idea. But everyone we put down probably is for a slightly different reason. And I wouldn't say it's about learning process, not about learning. If someone's talking about an individual stock or saying this is a great stock or whatever, if it's someone that's worth following, you need to learn their process, not on what they're talking about that particular day, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense, because we don't want to be conveying the idea that people can construct an investment strategy based on tips. That's just not going to work, is it?
No, no. You'll find that it may work for a short period of time, or it may work for an elongated period of time. In investment terms, I think of a short period of time as 3 years. That's probably not other people's idea of a short period of time, right? But if it's not based on sound principles, it will fall over. Markets do change. We were talking off air earlier that, since the COVID and since money's been flooding the market with stimulus, that, stocks have been behaving fairly unusually, is probably putting it mildly. I think I'm sensing this year that that's going back to normal, i.e. good stocks, good companies are starting to behave well, bad stocks are starting to behave badly. But we've had, on Twitter, people who do follow Twitter, rockets and going to the moon and all this sort of stuff.
The rocket emojis,
The rocket
isn't it?
Emojis.
Yeah.
And that's quite often, tends to be stocks that, the chances of them having longevity is small. The amount of, eventually most stocks on the stock market go bust, right?
So out of the 2,000 stocks or so.
Well, Australia's really unusual in that the top sort of 20 is dominated by fairly...
The banks and resources.
Well-established companies. Yep. And I'm talking to companies that are 80, 90, 100 years old, right? That creates an issue for our market as well, because it's dominated by fairly reasonably stagnant companies. You know, growth is a problem. And yeah, we've seen banks, and especially over the years, trying to go offshore and grow their businesses. And yeah, systematically, the Australian banks have pretty much failed with that and come back with their tail between their legs, because Australia's a very unique banking environment, I think,
would be highly protected,
highly protected,
monopolistic environment.
Exactly. I think the average, I think banks make like $3,000 profit per person or some ridiculous number. Don't hold me to that exactly, but it's a ridiculous number. And you know, you just don't get that sort of monopolistic protection offshore. So that they've struggled. But if you go to other countries and in growth sectors and in smaller, you know, the stock market's thousands of stocks. It's not just 20 or 50 stocks.
Mm.
The majority of those will actually never, well, yeah, won't survive
past
a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the turnover rate in the ASX 200, 30% go bust.
Of the whole of the ASX or the ASX 200?
Of the ASX 200.
Of the ASX 200?
Yeah.
Now, wow, that's an interesting statistic that I've never heard before from many of my guests.
It's pretty surprising numbers. So, yeah.
Be careful. Watch out. Do your research.
Be careful. Exactly. Do your research, and you know, you've got to decide how you're going to invest, what you're going to invest in. Yeah, there's all sorts of lessons. Never fall in love with a company, for instance.
So this brings me to the next question, because I noticed in one of your blog posts, you said sometimes it's okay to lose, and you were using the Vanguard Emerging Markets ETF as an example. Do you remember that blog post? I think it was someone who wanted to, you know, a friend of theirs invested in an emerging markets ETF, went really well, and then they went into it, you know, based on the past performance.
It went badly. You get a lot of that, right? When you're making your investment decision, you've got to be decided what you're investing for and the reason. Now, emerging markets in an ETF, I think, is probably a good place to be over the long term. But long term's 10 years. Right, and potentially longer. People that go in there for short term, like emerging markets, had a really good run in the last sort of 12 months. They suffered through COVID, but from the bottom, they've been, you know, solidly up. You've got obviously all emerging tech ETFs like Asia. Have a little bit of look under the hood. I think it's great ETF, and Beta Shares do a great job. It's quite heavily weighted, that particularly ETF. So you are, you know, you're quite heavily weighted to just a few stocks.
So this is Asia.
ETF called Asia.
Yeah.
So it's focused on tech in Asia, obviously.
Yep.
So it's a little bit on the same theme that I'd have been writing there. So you want to be careful of just buying into a market just because it's gone up a long way, because markets do work like waves, if you like. You know, they do go up and down. So perhaps don't put all, you know, put everything in one go. So if you're going into something because someone else did and they've been in there a long while, you know, you might need a little bit of patience to choose when to go, or be prepared to sit down through some what we call drawdown, i.e. some losses. Yeah, that principle applies everywhere.
So it's okay to lose money but not to lock in the loss, is that the point?
No, definitely not. There's a lot of people that do, especially in trading, and I don't know if you're do trading or lots of people that pretend they're traders. And then all their losses become their investments, right? That's not the way to go.
Yeah.
You've just got to be disciplined, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So don't just chase something. Buy your time. Maybe wait till it's in a more suitable buy point.
Yeah.
If it's been running really hot for 6-9 months, jumping on board, it's probably running out of steam.
Even with an ETF, then maybe you should be picking your time to buy.
It's how you're going to do it, right? So if you're doing ETFs, it's slightly different. If you're doing an ETF, I would recommend that you basically dollar cost average, right? And for beginners, I think ETFs are a good safe way to go, as long as you've got the right time frame on them.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy all sorts of ETFs. I would recommend, you know, whole of market ETFs, and maybe even you can get global market
Yeah.
ETFs. So Australia is a small bit of the global world, right?
Yeah.
I know we live here and et cetera, but, you know, it's a small pinprick of the world.
Because you can buy a MSCI, can't you?
Yeah, they're exactly.
They're called MSCI funds, which is like the whole world index.
Exactly. There's plenty of global. You find them on Vanguard. Just off the top of my head, I can't remember, but certainly Vanguard have global.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of them will have.
Exactly. Global. So you can buy a global one. You can buy an Australian one if you want as well. If you're going down the ETF route, nothing wrong with dollar cost averaging and nothing wrong with staggering your investments. So if you want to get started on that, just invest an amount today. Don't wait. You can manage your risk, but you can't know what the market's going to do in the future. There's a misunderstanding of time in the markets, I think. You can't know what the market's going to do in the future, but you can manage your risk. That's two separate things. But if you're going to dollar cost average, make an investment now, at least you're in, and then you can wait for some market pullbacks. You know, 10% pullbacks in the market is fairly regular, you know, so it's worthwhile waiting for it. 20% pullbacks happen probably every couple of years at least, sometimes a little bit more. If you get to 30, 40%, they become less regular, right? So don't think there's going to be another massive COVID sell-off.
They're more like 10-year horizons, really, aren't they?
They're more, I think traditionally people would have said 10 years. I think they're more frequent than that.
No.
Yeah, and they have been more frequent than that. Well, we've certainly have a number since sort of the late 90s to now that would make it much more than 10 years. But, you know, there's certainly, every 5 years or so. I think 2018, we had a sort of good solid sort of 15, 16, 17, something like that, sell-off, and then that recovered. And then we obviously had the COVID. Mm-hmm. So you will get opportunities with a little bit of patience. So if you're doing lump sums, that's what I'd recommend. If you're just doing monthly contributions, don't worry about it. Just get started and do monthly contributions because, as I said, you don't know what the market's going to do in the future. And that way you'll end up, you know, at an average situation. I have done a lot of, or seen a lot of research whereby actually if you dollar cost average and you're doing it on a monthly basis, that's a pretty solid way to go.
Yeah.
You're managing that risk differently from if you were managing individual stock risk. If you buy individual stocks and a much more concentrated portfolio, you've got to manage your risk a little bit differently.
Yeah. We talk often about the core satellite approach, where maybe the core of your portfolio is going to be ETFs, and then on the edges of it, you might be starting to dabble in with individual stocks.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong
because
with that.
Because it's more fun.
Yeah, exactly. People like
and you're
to
learning.
Do, people like to do their research. People like to study some stocks and read about them and or companies and things, and that's good. Certainly, I think at the pace of technology, there's always excited developments, exciting companies to do. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. When you're comfortable with how you manage the money or your position, shall we say, or your stocks, then, but as a starting place, ETFs, then satellite and core and satellite, then, when you're confident or you've got the skills enough, you can manage your own portfolio directly.
Managing the risk as well.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the thing is when you're buying individual stocks, you've got usually much more concentration on those stocks. So I think most portfolios are sort of around that 10 positions, 10 to 15 positions maybe, and that's all they've got. I've seen a lot of retail portfolios with even less than that and real concentration risk.
And that's not really diversified at all,
that's
is
not,
it?
I mean, market risk, that they reckon sort of about 18, 20 stocks sort of starts to diversify that seismic risk, if you like. But individual stock risk is, if you've got 10% in one position and something happens to that, it's going to have an effect on your, a significant effect on your returns.
Yep.
However, if you pick those positions well, that's going to have a significant effect on your returns as well. Mm-hmm. So it's, don't want to bang on about it, but it's risk management at all times is the key to managing individual stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And do your research, if you want to look at and do study all the company reports and all the rest of it, or the company announcements and really understand what the company's doing, that's terrific. That's good. A good company does not necessarily make a good stock. Mm-hmm. A good stock does not necessarily make a good company. So you've got to, that, you know, your process, your research process is to build comfort to take a position,
mm-hmm.
right? Once you've taken the position, somewhat you're in the lap of the gods, okay? So then it's about risk management.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things there. There's the things with the company may change that you need to keep on top of, but outside factors may change, or the share price just doesn't perform how you expect it to,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you've identified things or opportunity in the market that a lot of people don't think is there yet. So you might be early on your position, but being early on your position and fundamentally right is the same as just being wrong. So you've got to get those two married up.
Mm-hmm. Because some investors would say that it's even worthwhile waiting if you're right and you've got the conviction that...
Yeah, you can. Certainly, we run watch lists mm-hmm. continually of stocks. These are all automated, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah, we run different watch lists for different strategies. So we have what is called a multi-factor strategy. So it's basically looking for stocks that are reasonably priced, stocks that have what we call good quality. And really, fundamentally, we mean earnings.
Mm.
Earnings growth, increased margins, earnings growth, that sort of thing. But the last one, and I think the most important thing, is positive momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we do that in relative strength. So we want to buy the strongest stocks.
So we're talking more of a technical analysis here now rather than a fundamental?
Well, this is fundamental analysis, but on the momentum side,
yep.
it's a mixture between technical and fundamental.
So momentum means that there's people wanting to buy.
Momentum.
Momentum
means a couple of things. It can be earnings momentum. It can be in anything. So it means something's increasing, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
So yes, it could be volume. It could be anything. Fundamentally, we're looking for stocks that are going up
mm-hmm.
in markets that are going up,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's the two kind of green lights, if you like, that we're looking for in momentum. We've got some other things around there, but those are the two major ones.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that's a hybrid, but we have these automated watch lists that of stocks that sit on there. Any one time there can be between 4 and 60 stocks that sit on these watch lists. Yeah, they'll sit there because they're good solid stocks, but that doesn't mean if we've got 60 there, we're not going to buy 60. It doesn't mean it's the right time
mm-hmm.
to buy them. So I think that's one thing for your listeners to understand, that a good stock doesn't mean a good company, and a good company doesn't make a good stock. It's terrific when you can get the two running together
mm-hmm.
because then you've got some comfort level that it should continue. Other people are seeing the same thing you're seeing. More people are wanting to buy it, hence the price is going up, or people are willing to pay more and more for that stock. But that's that's what you want. And with that, and sorry, we're going to go off on tangents all over the place here.
I love a tangent. It's okay.
With that, see, one of the things about the risk management is you've really got to understand this, and this is vitally important, is I'm going to assume all your listeners have finite capital. So every time we're making an investment, one of the big driver of investment performance or bad investment performance is opportunity cost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're allocating resources to a position, that's resources you cannot allocate to another position.
Mm.
So if it's not behaving in the way you're expecting, right, to me, opportunity cost, you've got to move on. So mm-hmm. make sure that you're not sitting, don't be wedded to a position. Don't be wedded to your opinion.
Challenge your own opinion.
Yeah.
Have other people challenge your opinion.
You might be right about the outlook of the company,
mm.
but at the moment, everyone else doesn't agree with you.
Yes.
Right? So you need a consensus to start to agree with you. And you need the share price to be going up. Otherwise, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we're doing this not to listen to
prove ourselves right.
Exactly. It's not an intellectual case study.
Yes.
It's making money.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. That's what we're trying to do.
Two different things. Yep. We're not trying to prove ourselves the most intelligent person in the room. We're trying to make sure that we can put the odds in our favour and so we can make money over the long term. That's a little bit of a difficult concept for some people to understand.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So if I can just go over it, it sounds like what you're trying to do is to stack the odds in your favour in the first place by trying to find good quality companies and stocks that have got momentum behind them, but then presuming that you're going to be wrong and that if, when you are wrong,
correct,
you're going to manage that risk.
Yeah, yeah, correct. So our game plan is to minimise the downside where we can, and we basically do that by managing downside market risks. We very rarely go 100% to cash. I think the GFC 2008 was probably the last time, but we go to cash fairly quickly. We start to go to cash when markets get very stretched to the upside, and we'll start to go a little bit. Now, sometimes we're wrong and we have to go get back invested again. But when we're right, we reduce that loss a lot. And the nature of losses to gains are asymmetrical risk.
Mm-hmm.
Right, a 50% loss takes 100% to recover from.
Yep.
Right. You know, whereas 100% gain only takes 50%, and you're back to where you were.
Yep.
Right. It's not an equal. The loss costs you far more than the gain.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
So you've got to be really solid on your risk management if you can sort of grapple with that concept. That kind of, you know, minimize your losses. Understand that doesn't matter what research, what things, you may be wrong, but what you're looking to do is make sure that if your analysis and the market agrees, and you've bought in a good position. So we would have stocks that we've held for years, but we also have stocks that we held for a week.
Yeah.
You know, if we're wrong,
yeah,
we might make a buy point that we think's a good solid buy point, but only the market will tell us.
Well,
if so, it's gonna work,
so you're that ruthless with it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that like, because I've read about risk reward ratios, where what you do is you set a buy price. If it goes below a certain price, you're going to just sell. And
yeah, so people work with solid stop losses, they're called. We do work with a kind of a stop loss. So if a position is down 10%, then we'll start paying more attention to it. If it drops to 20%, we'll pay serious attention to it. And if it drops by 30%, we'll be gone anyway, no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. So that's our process. We are of a size, we don't want to be just selling in and out willy-nilly. If you have a hard stop loss in the market, yeah, that would wipe us out, and we don't want our position to be, you know, just flood the market on a stop loss, right?
Yeah,
we've got to manage things differently from your listeners probably have to do.
Because you've got to move it. You can't do it all
correct,
at once.
Correct.
Otherwise,
we
you're
can't
going to
just
affect the price.
Bang it onto the market. However, if you put your initial buy point, right, now you've got to learn about how to do a buy point and where's a safe way to buy and a safe time to buy, and that's, you know, another time, I suspect. But when you do your buy point, you've got to identify when you're wrong, right? Stocks move around 5, 10% pretty regularly. I think past 20% is you're starting to say,
I'm
probably a bit wrong here. Mm-hmm. Something's wrong. I've either got the timing wrong, or have I got the... So if you were, for example, putting a 5% position...
Mm-hmm.
On, so you've got, you're holding 20 stocks, so 5%
each stock. One of them is 5%.
One of them,
yep.
One was 5%. So if you've got a 20% stop loss in there, so you're going to sell it if your position goes down 20%, that's a 1% total equity lost of your portfolio.
So which sounds like a manageable kind of risk.
That's a reasonable, exactly. Because you are going to have runs whereby, you know, our win rate, as an example, is less than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a worse ratio than a coin toss. Right?
Really? Even when you're trying to stack the odds in your favour?
And in a coin toss...
Well, I'm glad you're being so honest here.
Well, that's because our risk control is so tight.
Yes.
Right? Because what we want to do is have winners that run 100, 200, 300% kind of thing.
Yeah.
What we're not willing to do is have losses that run at 50%, et cetera, to the downside.
Mm-hmm.
So... a lot of our positions, we're wrong on the timing, right? And so we get out, and then we'll get back in a later date, because what often happens is a stock will fall. It'll go into what we call a basing pattern. So it's a period whereby it's kind of found its value for the time being.
Mm.
Those that have sold have been sort of forced out, if you like, yep. And the people holding are the holders. But because it's been sold off, people aren't buying it. So it will base for a while until new buying interest comes in. And you know,
or something changes.
Conceptually, that is something we would look at, and for a while, and we'll make a decision to buy in there at some point when we think it's starting to move up. And if we get it right, we might hold that for years. If we get it wrong, it will fall away again through that base pattern,
mm-hmm.
and we just want out. Right? We're just wrong, and we just move on to the next one and hope we're right next time. But on that, going back to the coin toss, you're going to get runs or losers. Doesn't matter how good a trader, how good investor you are. If you're on a 50-50 win rate, every time you flip a coin, for instance, you know, you've got a 52% chance of winning next time, but that doesn't mean you're not going to get runs of losers. So it's perfectly possible that you're going to have, well, one standard deviation is 13, two is 26 odd, I think, off the top of my head. Mm. So you are going to see runs of 13, 26 losers regularly.
Yes.
So that doesn't mean something's wrong with your decision making. Might be. You need to analyse and need to work that out.
But that's just basic statistics, isn't it?
That's stats, right? That's maths.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we build our systems on. You've got to understand. Yeah, and that's all part of your risk management and thinking that kind of next level, I suppose.
Yeah. It's a counterintuitive thought. You wouldn't go to a doctor who is wrong 50% of the time.
Correct.
And people really need to get their heads around the idea that it's like you say, you want to be able to cut your losses hang on the good ones.
See, I would be happy, you know, a doctor, when he comes to see you, if it's complicated, I've been to a doctor a lot where they don't know what they are. So they send you for tests. They send you for other things because they go, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making hypotheses of what it might be.
Yes.
Right? So I'd prefer to go to a doctor that doesn't stay wrong.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Being wrong's fine.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor might make a hypothesis and he'll go and test it and he's wrong. So he'll move on to another hypothesis, right? So I think a good doctor will actually understand that there's a good chance he may be wrong, but what we'll do is we'll test and see if he is wrong. So he's like, in investing terms, he's taking a position. He's going to see if it works or not. And mm-hmm. if it doesn't work, he's going to cut and take another
hopefully
position.
Hopefully cut, not too
severely. No, hopefully not you. But so I think, you know, I think, yeah, there's a lot of professions where actually risk management is so important that we probably don't think about.
Mm.
And maybe they don't think about.
Mm.
But it is the same.
It is the same idea behind it.
It's the same mental. Mm. But I think as humans, we struggle with the concept of not being wrong.
Yes.
Because our whole education system, our whole life is built around, our sense of self is built around being right and being valued for your opinion,
mm-hmm.
because your opinion means something and it's valuable and it's right, right? So you're taught this from school, right? You get a star for being right. I don't think anyone's ever got a star for doing something and failing, right? Maybe that's something we should start teaching kids.
Failure is all part of the process.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And failure is part of investing as well.
Exactly. And failure is fine. As long as you understand it, you grow from it, you just accept it as part of a natural thing.
Yeah.
I think when you really understand that, it changes your outlook on things. And I think as I've got older, you start to realise that actually, you know, the older I get, the less I know kind of concept. And so you start to, remain open to any possibility, especially the possibility that you might be wrong, right, in any opinion, right? So that's, that's kind of a sort of a look into it, if you like.
So if people are interested in finding out more about you, what's your Twitter handle first?
Oh, geez. I think it's just my name, isn't it?
Isn't it Adam_Turk or something?
I think it's just my name. You can see I really hunt for Twitter followers. just @AdamDTurk.
And Harbourside Capital, if people are interested in finding more about Harbourside Capital.
Yeah, so if you look at harbourside capital.com.au, that'll tell you a little bit about us. There's some articles, probably some we need to update some, but there's a fair few sort of articles of different concepts on there that might be of interest. Yeah, if people get hold of me on Twitter or anything, I'll do my best to answer their questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to get hold of me.
Yeah, it's been a totally different interview to what we started out with, but it's fantastic.
Hopefully it makes for a good one. But yeah, that's the, I think yeah, the risk side and understanding that and thinking about it is, I think, where your listeners will get the best long-term benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't understand that yet, they're probably not ready to do the ETF thing to start with.
Just do the ETF.
Yeah, to start with.
Yeah.
Until the penny drops and you go, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the, that's the key to me, I think.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Adam, for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Shares for Beginners is for information and educational purposes only. It isn't financial advice and you shouldn't buy or sell any investments based on what you've heard here. Any opinion or commentary is the view of the speaker only, not Shares for Beginners. This podcast doesn't replace professional advice regarding your personal financial needs, circumstances or current situation. Thanks to Christopher Soulos for music production with that special Greekalicious flavour. Remember, music always flows, even when the money won't.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.